Good morning, everybody, and welcome to 3CR Thursday Breakfast. This is the Sustainable Breakfast Series coming live to you from the Friends of the Earth Food Co-op at 312 Smith Street in Collingwood. But don't take my word for it. We've got Michaela from Friends of the Earth to give us a bit of a rundown.
Good morning.
Good morning, Michaela.
Down at Friends of the Earth all this week, we've been collaborating with 3CR and offering a free breakfast. So we're at 312 Smith Street, so come on down. So from 7 till 8:30, you've just got today and tomorrow left to join us. And, today on the menu we've got tortillas with refried beans, salsa verde, and tofu cream, or you can have our house-made muesli. There's also some banana muffins baking in the oven right now. Just to let you know a little bit about the Friends of the Earth Food Co-op, for those who don't know us already, we've been around for around 40 years now, so about the same age as 3CR, actually.
You are, you're right, yes. Yeah. It's our 40th year this year.
And we are focused on being a waste-wise venue. So most of all our compost goes to the Fitzroy Primary School Kitchen Garden Program. And we offer organic and locally sourced as much as possible and ethical food products in bulk. So you can bring your own containers. You don't need to use any packaging when you shop here. And we have beautiful organic vegetables and other products as well.
And beautiful, beautiful coffee. And at the moment, I'd rather take coffee than compliments at the moment. It's all good.
So, one of our focuses also over recent years has been the cafe. And we serve a beautiful mixed plate from midday every day. And it's always vegan and gluten-free also to cater for everybody's needs. And that's just the plate is an example of, how you can cook with all the products that we've got here, no packaging, and have a really beautiful, healthy, sustainable meal.
Thank you very much, Michaela. And for all of those who know Thursday Breakfast, the last year we were here, it was Con, Shabi and myself, but I'm joined by John Langer this morning. Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you? And welcome to Sustainable Breakfast. Thank you, Michaela, and we'll be checking out the breakfast here. We'll be munching on Mike, maybe.
The tortilla is for me. Would you like to tell our listeners about who our guests are for today?
Yep, and we've got first coming up Lorna Pettifer from Ceres Environment Park, and she's going to be talking about a couple of projects that are on at the moment. 7:30, Cassie Duncan from Sustainable Table. She's going to come in and discuss, I think, one of their campaigns.
Yep, the Give a Fork campaign, which is a no-waste campaign.
And at around 7:40, we've got Trish Pringle coming in from the Richmond Community Garden and the Burnley Backyard Project. And at around 8 o'clock, we've got Fran Morell, and she's from Madge. And don't ask me what MADGE stands for. It's Mothers Against something like Genetic Engineering.
Pretty much. I forget what the D stands for. But
We'll have to ask her. She's going to be talking about genetically modified crops. They're all over the place.
All over the place. It's interesting when you've got kids, that's all you sort of do. I think look around and say, what's wrong with these kids? Why are they ADHD? Is it the stuff that we're eating? And you start to ask weird questions.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the other thing, too, I guess people at FO have been already talking about this, but when you're trying to find out whether your food is genetically modified, it's very difficult to actually find out on the packages.
But I think at the moment we might go to our thing.
Yummy! Here we are. What's on the menu today? Breakfast Friends of the Earth, here, right now.
Yummy, 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 I got love in my tummy and chili and yummy.
The real me Front Page, where 3CR Breakfast explores what's being reported and what's not in Australia's mainstream media. How the media prioritise the day's news, including issues of bias, corporate influence, and who gets a voice and who doesn't. Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. and again at 8 a.m. A critical analysis of the nation's newspapers.
We're back, and I just realised we forgot something, John. The Sustainable Breakfast Series has a different theme every day, and our theme today is food. We forgot to tell.
We should have said that. I think people would have picked it up maybe from our introduction.
Hey, I think they might have.
Friends of the Earth, Food Co-op.
312 Smith Street, Collingwood. So it's going to be a slightly different twist to the front page. I think we'll focus on food, and I don't want to make light of this. Obviously, we woke up to the horrible news 2 days ago of a gangland lawyer who was... slain, and the front page of the Herald Sun says he knew too much, but I'll go past that. There's a story here with an interesting headline written by Keith Moore. It says, a price war between two green grocers bore deadly fruit for years. So apparently as a client for Joe Acquarina, Calabrian businessman Tony Matareffi will be questioned about his dealings. And apparently he ran a fruit and vegetable shop in the Kingsway in Glen Waverley. So there's that link to fruit there and food. The other story I've got in here is about a Jetstar engineer who got his job back because he put lunch before safety. a peckish Jetstar engineer who drove a baggage tow tug to the local servo for a bite to eat is one of multiple examples of serious safety breaches at the airline. Mind you, this is not happening at Tullamarine. It's happening at Avalon. So you can understand, you know, have enough food places there. You've got to get onto the Princess Highway to go to a BP and get yourself a Mrs. Max pie or something like that. And what's in the Australian, heart of the nation?
Yeah, look, this is a little bit more. This is a little bit harder hitting here. This is Blackmore's Bega. Target China's aging population. And this is an interesting article. This is in the Australian cheesemaker Bega and the vitamin giant Blackmores are eyeing the aging population for their next joint venture product after strong launch of baby formula. And the Blackmores, they're talking about the fact that in 30% of people are forecast to be over the age of 65 in China by 2020. So they decided, why not?
Let's open a cheese shop.
Yeah, let's open a cheese shop, give them a whole bunch of stuff that'll clog up their arteries, and that'll be the end of the population problem in China.
That's the Australian triad, isn't it?
And the other thing that's interesting, too, in relation to the Blackmore's vitamins going to China, there's been a whole lot of controversy just very recently about whether vitamins actually work. Mm. And people are saying that buying vitamins is just a total waste of time and money, particularly money. But there they are. They're going into China.
I think for some people, maybe they do, elderly. But I have a big problem. I had a guy I worked with who was giving his 2- and 4-year-old vitamins. And I thought that was quite disturbing personally, to start giving two kids that age vitamins. I don't know too much about that. Anything else in the heart of the nation? Or was that the only food story?
Oh, no. I've got another one here.
This is
the Fin Review. And Japan's just about to overhaul the survey of consumption data. And apparently Japan has been doing this consumer survey for a number of years. But they're finding it's very ineffective because the households spend a lot of money, but most of their survey is being done on older people who tend to be a little bit more abstemious with their cash. They're a little bit more, you know, frugal. And what you have to do in this survey is you get questions. You have to weigh your groceries, officially weigh them. You have to write down what you've bought, and you put them on scales, and you submit the data. And they're trying to get more young people involved in this survey. But it turns out, as one of the respondents said, when I'm out drinking, there were several times when my memory became rather vague and I couldn't log the details accurately. So it's impossible to log everything. So there you are. That's the Japanese food consumption survey.
I love it. I love it. I'll go quickly to the age. There's two stories here. I mean, obviously, we know that there's anti-corruption hearings that have been going on about the education system. So apparently on the final day of a four-week anti-corruption hearing, an explosive recording was played of embattled former Education Department Deputy Secretary Daryl Fraser engaging drinks with Ms. Bronwyn Pikes. And it says here she's been snared in phone taps, agreeing to secretly chew the fat. That's where my food association is.
Oh, yes.
The other story here, there is a seafood fraud on our plates. Apparently, whether it is in a can, a shop window, or in a restaurant, 30% of the world's seafood is still mislabeled, according to research by the International Marine Stewardship Council. Seafood fraud, which is the selling of seafood products with misleading labels, descriptions or promise, can have wide-ranging consequences on fisheries management and protection of marine ecosystems. Yeah, I find sometimes when I go to the market, you know, you always get that's got the product of Australia, Bassa. And you think, we don't even have Bassa there. It's just a product of Australia sticker with a price.
What's Bassa?
You know? Yeah.
What is it exactly?
And one last one that I found. So the ACCC wants to make it harder for big companies and the government, obviously, to brutalise their smaller competitors. This is all about predatory pricing, which is a classic example where a big company sets prices so low that it forces its competition out of business. And there's a call to impose an effects test, which would mean that the regulator would have to prove only that a company's market power was substantial and that its actions would lessen competition. I wonder what that means for people like you and me who are forced to then go to Woolworths and Coles and nowhere else.
It's interesting, actually, just scanning the papers, just to summarise, there is a lot of material out there reporting on food. I mean, it's quite central to the whole culture. So get on down to Friends of the Earth. We're a sustainable breakfast. What a segue. And we are Thursday breakfast. I'm getting my days confused. It's John and Dean.
We'll be back in a moment.
3CR Breakfast would like to say thank you to program sponsor, the New International Bookshop, for the financial support of this program. You can find the New International Bookshop in the basement of Trades Hall at 54 Victoria Street, Carlton.
Well, and we are back at Friends of the Earth on Smith Street in Collingwood. We're Sustainable Breakfast Thursday edition. Our first guest on Sustainable Breakfast, and we're talking about food, is Lorna Pettifer. She's the manager of education and training at Ceres Community Environment Park, located in East Brunswick, right on the Mary Creek. Lorna, I have a confession to make. I want to start with a confession. I wanted to find out what Ceres meant. I thought it was an acronym.
It's two things, actually.
And I found out it is the Roman goddess of agriculture. How many people knew that?
Well, there you go. It is an acronym, and it also represents a word as well, which is Ceres, the Roman god of harvest or agriculture. So it also means Ceres is an acronym for the Centre of Environmental Research, Education and Research in Environmental Strategies. I always get my two E's mixed up whenever I say that, but yeah.
All right. Well, we've got that sorted out, the technical issues. Tell us a little bit about, you're the manager of education and training. Tell us very briefly, what does the manager of education and training do, briefly?
Briefly, I would say my job involves dreaming, designing and developing programs, and also managing staff as well. It's a great job to have. As I mentioned to you before, I've been working there for 10 years, and there's lots of people that have been working there for a while because they're great people and the great programs and opportunities at Ceres.
Look, Lorna, why the need for education and training at Ceres? I mean, obviously, I've been to the cafe, I've been to a beautiful garden. How did that come about, the need for that?
I guess it was an early part of Ceres. Ceres is a little bit younger than 3CR and also FO. We're probably closer to 35 now, I think. And we started our programs really early. It just became, when we became an environment park, some school kids came along, and we used to have free education programs just to teach them how to compost and just to share the knowledge of sustainability with the community, I guess. Mm. And that it's grown from that. It just became a location for education and training.
Now, you're starting up an interesting new project this year. It's called the Food Producer Incubator Program, and it's aimed at training and supporting newly arrived young migrants. Tell us a bit about the background on that.
Yeah, it's one of my babies, this program. It's a program that came out through grant funding from the Lord Mayor's Charitable Foundation and the Inner North Foundation. So basically, it came about from us having a community kitchen where we have hospitality and food programs. So recently we got a permit for people to produce food and sell it. So I thought, how can we then craft a program to give people opportunity to build confidence in cooking food and working in a commercial kitchen, and also incorporate accredited training because we are an RTO as well and we train in hospitality, and just giving them an opportunity to make food, good, ethically sustainable food, and also gain experience in a kitchen. And the beauty of a series is that we're quite diverse, so we also have our social enterprises that sells food, that they also have enterprises where they can test the food as well, so it's quite multifaceted.
And in terms of the actual teaching and mentoring in this program, who does that?
Well, we've got lots of amazing trained hospitality and food people at Ceres. So the mentors, we're bringing in mentors from local food businesses that have been successful. We're using mentors in-house from our own food enterprises, and also looking at some business mentors as well. So making sure, it's a bit like a food niche program in a way. So we're making sure that they can also build business acumen, if you like, so that they leave with the confidence to start their own possible ethical food business.
You mentioned dreaming in your role, and so this is one of your babies. Is this the first year that this is being run?
Yeah, this is a new program, and it's the first year it's being run. And at the moment, we're taking enrolments, and it's starting on April the 7th. We've got quite a few candidates that we're interviewing at the moment, but there's a few spaces left, and it's... I guess the audience is new migrants, and also with a focus on youth, but we're also taking people over 30 as well, but mostly youth. And also for one of our grant programs, we're in the Inner North, it's focused on Moreland, Yarra and Darabin, because there'll be some preference for those candidates as well.
Yeah. And I guess the reason I ask is, do you foresee that there might be a bit of a, maybe not a backlash, but people who are within that community who are that young might want to do the same course, but because it is for newly arrived migrants, people might sort of feel a bit left out, or do you have an option for that later on as well?
Oh, okay. So if it at the end of the program, if we find that it's a good model after we evaluate and do all the stuff we have to do with grant projects, then we'd love to repeat it and offer it to community members. Yeah. But we have so many programs available for community as well. I was just showing off our new course guide.
Oh, it's amazing.
I guess we have workshops every weekend, and also longer term courses as well as accredited training and in gardening, cooking, craft and sustainability. So there's lots of opportunities for everyone to get involved at all levels, from kindergarten to age that you like. Yeah,
and it's a nice combination and a nice community thing to do too, to welcome newly arrived migrants into the community.
Definitely. We've had a tradition in our training programs of focusing on marginalised groups and making sure there's alternative access to education at Ceres as well as mainstream education for groups.
Now, your big event for the year is coming up at Ceres.
We're very excited. Harvest.
Yes, Harvest Festival's this Friday. The Harvest Festival goes on every year. What can people expect and look forward to this year?
Before
you answer that, on last Thursday in the paper, apparently kids in primary school couldn't tell you where fruit came from. You know, couldn't even tell you that it grew on trees, which is, you know, really, really surprising. So the Harvest Festival is something
that... part of that.
Yeah.
Well, we work with lots of students in schools, so hopefully the schools that we've worked with in sustainability know that fruit comes from trees.
But, well, it was in the Herald Sun.
So, yeah, so some areas still haven't had access to much sustainability education. But Harvest Festival is amazing. The office is abuzz at the moment with... I guess, energy putting towards the Harvest Festival. There's lots of music. I'm doing the stage managing on the day. So we've got two stages. with over 10 bands throughout the day. It's running from 10 till 3, so come on down to Ceres on Saturday. There's $5 entry fee, but it also puts you in the running for fantastic door prizes as well. Also, there's food, lots of food. It's all about food and harvest. There's going to be one of our social enterprises, some Sri Lankan asylum seekers, the Tamil Feast, are running a massive feast in the middle of the day, as well as external food stalls. There'll be heaps of there'll be a massive market for craft, healing, food, everything. I can't even mention it all. Kids' activities. yeah, there'll be a baking competition every year. It's really, really rad. The CWA come down and look at our baking and preserve competition. So, and it's very, very serious when the CWA women come in and do the judging. Everyone needs to be silent and just let them go to their work in tasting the preserves and cakes. And some of the cakes that come out are amazing and beautiful looking and beautiful tasting.
Oh. Country Women's Association.
Yeah, the Country
Women's Association.
That's right. Thank you.
It sounds incredibly enticing. And tell us where we can get the details.
So at the moment, you can go to the Ceres Facebook site or the Ceres website, ceres.org.au. So we've got lots of stuff about harvest on there. And the program at the moment is online on Facebook on our events page as well. So, yeah, we're very excited. So come on down on Saturday.
Yeah, and look, Lorna's given us the guide, the Ceres course guide, and it is incredibly impressive. There's a massive amount of courses. And this is also, as I understand, available online.
Yes.
You can have a look at it. So...
Thank you, Lorna, for joining us on Sustainable Breakfast.
Thank you for having me. Have a great morning.
You're currently listening to 3CR's Sustainable Breakfast series in its third year, broadcasting live from Friends of the Earth. You can join us each morning from Tuesday the 15th to Friday the 18th of March at the Friends of the Earth Food Co-op for 4 days of live broadcasts, free breakfasts and live music. Hear 3CR's breakfast presenters with campaigners, commentators and innovators talking about the most important challenge of our time, how to achieve environmental sustainability with social justice. Each morning this week, Tuesday the 15th to Friday the 18th of March, 7am to 8:30am, 3CR is broadcasting live at Friends of the Earth's Food Co-op and Organic Cafe. Find us at 312 Smith Street in Collingwood. Tune in to 3CR, 8:55am, 3CR Digital, or stream us via 3cr.org.au. 3CR Sustainable Breakfast Week, supported by the City of Yarra and Friends of the Earth.
Welcome back to 3CR Thursday Breakfast during the Sustainable Breakfast Series, broadcasting live from Friends of the Earth Food Co-op 312 Smith Street, Collingwood. Come and watch the show live and enjoy a delicious free brekkie. I've just, been trying to come up with some great coffee quotes because I've got the best coffee I've ever tasted. Here's one. I make love like I make coffee. Thursday mornings, I offer free refills. That's what you find online. It's crazy quotes about coffee. We're joined now by Cassie Duncan. Last time we had Hayley Morris.
That's right.
Yep. And she was talking to us about her No Waste initiative. And that was 2 years ago that I spoke to Hayley. Has that now gone into the new No Waste campaign called Give a Fork? Is that correct? Or are they two different things?
Well, Give a Fork has been running for 3 years now. We had a little break last year just because of funding issues, but this year we've relaunched the campaign and we're super excited about it. When Hayley came in, the focus was on waste. This year we've got a general focus to Give a Fork about food, and we have three different challenges that people can participate in. And what we're really trying to achieve with the campaign is that we can start small with our sustainability behaviours, and you don't have to be intimidated by the environmental movement.
Yep.
Small actions often lead to a lot, and also we really want to put environmentalism on the map and
make it sexy.
Yeah, exactly.
We're joined by Cassie Duncan, and she is the co-founder of Sustainable Table. I forgot to mention that. How did you start Sustainable Table? I'll get back to Give a Fork in a minute, but what was the reasoning behind that? Obviously, you just mentioned you're trying to make it, make it a bit sexy and make sure that everybody is doing a bit for the environment as well as the food focus. How did you get to, start the whole concept?
Well, Hayley and I went to school together, and we were feeling frustrated by that sense of overwhelm that people have when you discuss climate change issues, and we really wanted to come up with a way to engage the broader population. I guess our friends and family, we identified as being really passionate about the environment, but it doesn't mean our friends and family also feel the same. So we really started it by just running education sessions with our extended networks. And we were a little bit disenchanted, I think, when we were running these sessions. People would just nod politely, but you could see that there wasn't that real engagement. And then we ran a session on food, and the whole mood in the room changed. The penny dropped for people. They realised that actually they're choices are really powerful. Controlling what you eat and how you eat for your own health and for the planet is actually empowering, and it shifts the message to a positive one when so much of the messaging in the media today is really negative and heavy. And we thought we need to capitalise on this and do something positive in the way of food and sustainability. And we really just started the first book, The Sustainable Table, was a collection of people's stories. We were wanting to be really honest and say, we don't have the answers, but there are people out there in the community doing wonderful things. So let's share their stories. And they all have embodied messages that will inspire people to change in their everyday lives.
And I guess the other thing is, a lot of people, well, 60% of the personal eco-footprint is embodied in the food that we buy. There is sort of no better place to start, I guess, going forward to make sure that the food that we buy isn't wasted and it does get reused. I think there's an organisation called Fair Share who rescue food.
Yeah.
So that whole idea of starting really, really small as an individual can lead to bigger and better things.
Yeah, and when you start to look at food system issues, you realise that at every touch point there is an impact. And you look at our transportation, you look at the way food is grown, you look at the issue of factory farming, and these are all things that we have control over. Every dollar we spend is a vote for the type of food system we would like to be a part of. And that's a hugely powerful message to share. And on the food waste issue, as you said, we throw out $8 billion worth of food a year here in Australia. And the majority of that is in the home. So it's really a re-education about being mindful when you do shop and learning tips and tricks about how you can avoid food waste altogether, and then also starting a compost and creating beautiful soil to grow your own vegetables in. And there's nothing more joyful than learning how to grow food, and I think when you develop appreciation of how hard it is to grow those tomatoes or that capsicum, you're willing to pay a little bit more and you're willing to shop direct and you really respect the farmers for what they do.
And I think one of the main things with city living too is that a lot of people don't have spaces to grow food, and it seems to be only certain areas that have community gardens. So it's like there's a few people who have that privileged opportunity to go somewhere to a Richmond Garden or to Ceres and be part of that. What can other people do who aren't, let's say you live out in Hoppers Crossing or one of those new places like Caroline Springs, do you think the message will get to those types of people out there as well to be able to just do their little bit as well?
I think I always refer to Costa on this. He says there's no excuse if you've got a few pot plants, if you've got I grow veggies in my front garden. It might not be as celebrated as a beautiful hedge, but it's really practical. So I think if you have a windowsill, if you have a tiny bit of space, then get growing. Even if you just start with herbs, most herbs come wrapped in plastic. They cost $5. You're saving money. Yep. It's a really joyful thing to do. And I think you just start small. There's also wonderful things. I've met some people who share backyards. So there might be elderly people in the community who aren't able to grow, but you can use their space and obviously give produce when you have an abundance of it. So there's really great community initiatives if you're interested in growing. I think there's definitely places out there that you can seek out.
Tell us a little bit about the Give a Fork campaign or the initiative?
Yeah, so that's currently running. It runs for the month of April, but we're currently encouraging people to sign up to challenges. So we really recognise that we don't have a national campaign yet that focuses on food system issues, and we feel like that needs to happen. We've got incredible campaigns like Movember for Men's Health. So let's put food on the map. We all have to eat three times a day, so let's engage with it a little bit more. The challenges are really about educating people and starting where you feel comfortable. So we've coined the term Grexy, which is a sexy greenie, and our challenges are labelled Grexy Teaser, Halfway to Grexy, and Drop Dead Grexy. And you can start with the first challenge is just about carrying a keep cup, saying no to bottled drinks and saying no to straws. The Halfway to Grexy is about meat-free Monday to Fridays, and so that's really educating people on the impact of our meat eating, but also allowing people, if they are big meat eaters, they can still enjoy it mindfully on weekends. And then the Drop Dead Grexy Challenge is trying to keep all your landfill trash that you would create for the month in a jar. So that is a whole education around waste, but also about sustainable and ethical eating.
And for those who don't know the word Grexy, it is a real word, and it's used to describe a sexy or appealing person who is also a greenie. So hashtag G-R-E-X-Y. That whole drop-dead Grexy person concept is amazing, because once you've got all that stuff in a jar, you sort of soon realise how much stuff you're sort of going through in a month.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, many people throw out a full bin of landfill waste a week, and that just doesn't need to be the case. We have so many options available to us, like where we are now at Friends of the Earth. You can buy your food in bulk, packaging free, and you get to know the people you're buying your food off. It's a real joy as well. So it doesn't have to be a chore. It can be daunting to begin with, but definitely is something that we should all celebrate.
How do people find out about Give a Fork?
If you visit the website, which is giveafork.com.au, we've got some incredible ambassadors on board this year, so people are talking about it everywhere, and we really encourage people to engage with the campaign. You get access to our e-books when you sign up, and you also get daily emails full of tips and tricks. So we really want to help people and support them along the way and have a bit of fun with it, and I guess redefine what sexy is. Sexy isn't about taking half-naked selfies. It's about taking your cloth bag to the supermarket, to the shops with you, or to the farmer's market with you, and carrying a keep cup. And it's about making sure you're reducing your waste, and let's make that cool.
Cassie, thank you very much for joining us on 3CR Thursday Breakfast, Sustainable Breakfast Series. And we'll keep an eye on, I think you've got a Twitter handle as well as your Instagram. And,
yes, that's right.
Hopefully get an update in about a month's time to see what some of the outcomes were. So thank you for joining John and myself.
Thanks for having me.
There we are.
Live broadcasting.
Yeah. And we are Sustainable Breakfast Thursday edition, and we're at the Friends of the Earth, 312 Smith Street, Collingwood, in the food co-op, and we're enjoying their breakfast. Come down. They got a free breakfast for anyone who comes between now and 8:30, and we've got a couple of other guests on the way. The city of Yarra has been at the forefront of initiatives to use densely populated urban spaces for various kinds of sustainable food production. The Richmond Community Garden Group is an active and energetic group of local residents who have been successfully using this kind of approach to urban space, and Thursday Breakfast thought it might be interesting to find out more. Trish Pringle is one of the key organizers for the Richmond Community Garden Group, and she's here with Thursday Breakfast. Good morning, Trish.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Good. Tell us a little bit about the Richmond Community Garden Group and where it all started.
Okay. Well, where I come from in Richmond, there aren't many opportunities for community gardens because most of the land is either lived on or it's pretty densely occupied. So although the council have said they're very keen on community gardens, there really was never any place that one could go. So when we saw a spot, there was a call for expressions of interest for an old, what had been a community, a sort of community house, I put in an application to put a community garden there, but there's also another group who wanted to run a community house from there, so we got together, and between us we invented what's called the Burnley Backyard. And it's a really interesting new typology, because what it is, it's a public backyard. So rather than being a place that you go into, it's the place that you come to and you do all the sort of things that people would like to do in their own backyards. But because it's mostly apartments and very small gardens around there, if you want to have fix your bike or grow some vegetables or have a children's birthday party, you come to the Burnley Backyard instead. And so they've got also a couple of buildings where they run yoga classes and workshops and lectures and things like that. But basically it's a sort of indoor-outdoor place rather than an indoor place. And it's been really interesting and really exciting.
When did this all start?
It's been open since July last year, but it took 4 years to get it through all the different stages of council and getting the local people to understand what it was and then to get enthusiastic about it. And it's very much loved now, it's very popular. So my role there is I look after, or I initiated the part of it that's a community garden, although I don't run it or anything like that. It's run by the people who are there. And they have got two sorts of community garden there. One is a thing called the rental plots, where people do pay money for a little plot. They pay between $50 and $100 a year for a plot, because we do have to contribute to the sort of financial viability of the whole scheme. And then the other part is the kitchen garden, and that's for anybody. That's public, and anyone can just come in and potter about and do a bit of gardening. With some degree of coordination, because obviously you can't just have somebody come in and plant stuff and somebody else come up and plant something else on top of it. But it's thriving. It's very an enjoyable place.
The way you're talking about it here is, I'm just trying to get a picture of what it looks like. Is it a series of houses with a fair bit of land around it?
It's if you imagine a building that was an old mother and child health centre. So it's like a large house on a fairly small ground. It would be the size of a substantial two or three bedroom home. I mean, not a huge property.
Right. Yeah, it's in the inner city.
It's in a very tight little area. Yeah.
And you've been successful. Organization's been successful in getting two grants from the City of Yarra for your work. Can you explain the first project that you got the grant for?
Yeah, last year we applied for a grant for to make a community compost hub, and that was because a lot of people around about, even if they have a little backyard, they were saying that they couldn't keep their compost heap going because there were rats, because it's quite near the river. So and also people who live in apartments don't have anywhere to put their compost stuff, or even if you've got a bokashi bucket or something, at the end of it you're stuck with it because you don't know what to do with it. So we wanted to make a place that people could bring their kitchen scraps, and so that was one. We've got an aero bin and a hungry bin worm farm, and that has been going for a few months now, and we're just at the stage where we're trying to get just very local people to sign up to bring stuff to it. You're not meant to sort of drive across Melbourne with a bucket of potato peelings.
People listening, don't drive across Melbourne to bring your scraps to the Richmond Community Garden.
And Trish, you talk about Richmond. When I lived in Richmond, it seemed like it was only 24-year-olds that live there. What's the demographic of people like?
It's one of the reasons why the backyard is quite a factor in its development. It's where it was, there had been quite a substantial community of people who'd been there for 20, 30, 40 years. And then, of course, it's the young ones as well. There was a bit of antagonism between all the young people coming in. But this is one of the things that's great about it, is that there are people who have been in the area for forever are meeting people who've just moved into apartments and they're actually talking to each other. And
it creates a community hub, so you don't get to see too many people on their mobile phones texting their friends about their veggies.
Yeah.
And what about your second project?
Oh, that's exciting, and I'm really glad to get a chance to talk about it to more people. We've got funds from Yara. I made an application to run a series of absolutely free workshops about gardening for people who just would like to start but really don't know. So they are aimed at people with the possibility of having a very small garden plot or even the balcony or the windowsill, and who just want to know how to get started. So there'll be roughly one a month over the rest of the year, and they're completely free because the speakers are being paid for by the funds that we got. So they're professional speakers, like really good people, like Karen Sutherland from Edible Eden and Angelo Eliades from Deep Green Permaculture, and we've got a couple of great cooks who are going to be talking about how to cook the stuff that you grow, because people find that when they actually grew their first cabbage, they sort of stood and looked at it and smiled at it and then said, what is this?
You know? And that complements what Cassie was just talking about before with the Give a Fork campaign. You know, you guys are at the forefront of teaching people and giving them an opportunity for free to learn how to grow.
So no, it's great. And the other thing is that we do a little bit like the other speaker was saying, we'd like them to be slightly social events. So even if you haven't got a garden and you come along, you might be the person, the old lady with the bit of backyard, and this might be the chance where you meet the young person who hasn't got a garden at all, and you just sort of get talking and it gets going. So it's a little thing, but it's just another little seed in there.
And where can people find out about it?
If they put Richmond Community Garden Group into Google, or they email me, richmondcommunitygardengroup@gmail.com, or they look for Burnley Backyard on the on Google, or they go to Eventbrite and they can register for any of the workshops there. There's one in a few weeks about how to grow microgreens on your windowsill. So if you haven't got anything at all, you can start in the windowsill.
So it starts in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, and then there's another about what to plan for autumn small space food gardening. And they go on through the year after that. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Trish Pringle, for coming into Sustainable Breakfast on Thursday. I'm talking to Trish Pringle, and she's one of the key organizers, as you just heard, of the Richmond Community Garden Group. Check them out online, and there's some classes coming up. Sounds actually really interesting. Thanks, Trish.
Thank you.
Yassas, yassu, and hello. This is Vasilios Papaioannou from 3CR Monday Greek Show, where we talk politics, music from Greece and all the community around. But did you know we also talk gardening? So for the gardening information, tips and discussion in Greek, join me on my show Monday Greek. Every Monday evening from 8 o'clock, right here on 3CR.
We're talking about ecological thinning and subsidised logging, but we basically mean the same things, don't we, here?
Wherever there are chemical corporations around the world, they're constantly trying to chip away at regulations.
Earth Matters, bringing you environmental and social justice stories, from developments in government and industry to the campaigns and communities that are standing up to them. Earth Matters plays at 11 a.m. Sunday and 6:30 a.m. Wednesday. Turn your dial to 855 a.m. or listen online at 3cr.org.au.
While the headlines have subsided, the nuclear power plant is still not under control, with the spent fuel rods removed from only one out of four reactors.
Law needs to change so that our rights can be recognised, so that decisions in relation to the use and exploitation of our lands is out.
Welcome back to 3CR Thursday Breakfast, the Sustainable Breakfast Series. We're coming live to you from Friends of the Earth Food Co-op at 312 Smith Street in Collingwood. Come down, watch a live show. There's going to be some music after 8 and enjoy a delicious free breakfast. We've already been joined by Lorna Pettifer from Ceres. We've been joined by Cassie Duncan from Sustainable Table. We just had Trish Pringle from the Richmond Community Garden in Burnley with her backyard project. Now we're going to be joined by one of our 3CR regulars who I had the pleasure of talking to only 3 weeks ago about poor Steve Marsh losing his compo case against Michael Baxter for his crops. Fran Morrell is from Madge, Madge Australia, and what they are is they have a campaign for people. How's that? An ambulance. To realise that they're eating GM food and to know what it is and how to avoid it. And I guess we all have a right to know what we are eating. So good morning, Fran.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on 3CR. John and myself were trying to work out what the acronym MADGE stood for. So we sort of said Mothers Against. We couldn't work out the D, but genetic engineering. Can you please give us a brief rundown about MADGE and the acronyms themselves?
Mothers are demystifying genetic engineering because we thought we're expected to buy this stuff and feed it to our families, so we need to demystify it so people can decide if they want it. But it also stands for mothers advocating deliciously good eating because we think food should be fun and eating should be a communal, happy, joyous thing, and that's what we want to promote.
Now, it's interesting you use the word genetic engineering. A lot of people talk about GM foods. The difference, or maybe what they understand, might not be as simple as what the words, the acronym GM stands for. I think it's, is it genetically modified organics that it stands for?
Genetically modified organism is what GMO stands for.
Yeah.
And this is what the industry has been very good at. It says, we've been genetically modifying things for thousands of years. I mean, grass has turned into wheat, and you think... Yes, but that was using basically, if I may say so, that was using plant sex. You know, that was crossing plants and choosing which ones. So that's what we've been doing for thousands of years. Mm. We haven't been taking bits of bacteria and viruses and shooting it into cells to damage the genome so it repairs and can create particular plants. That's what genetic engineering is.
Stand up against pesticides and things like that.
Well, exactly. And a lot of the industry is also very good at making people think that it's higher nutrition or can withstand drought. 99% of crops can either be sprayed with a weed killer and not die, which is usually Roundup, which is a probable carcinogen, or it creates a toxin that kills insects by destroying their guts. Mm. And because it's in the plant, it can't be washed off, so we eat it. So that's basically what genetic engineered plants do.
And you mentioned that essentially it's, foods that have been, that have happened as a result of modifying genetic material. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the modern produce that is actually on the banned list, so to speak? You know, because we sort of, you know, you go and read labels and it says this is genetically okay or it's GM modified and you can eat it. So it seems like there's a massive line there that people have to sort of work out.
Well, we've actually done this, and this is no good for your radio listeners, but we've done this little decision tree to help people because we basically have no labelling in Australia. And if it's fresh produce, like fruit or vegetables, it's okay. None of those are genetically modified. You can eat those. What you do have to worry about is canola and cottonseed that we grow in Australia. And you probably think, well, I don't eat cottonseed, but you do eat cottonseed oil, and it's in practically everything. And the other things are... corn, soy, sugar beet, and those end up as ingredients in processed foods, and they're pretty ubiquitous, and they're the weird ingredients like maltodextrin that comes from corn or soya lecithin. So it's all over the place.
How do people find out how you can, well, first of all, detect this stuff, and then second of all, I suppose... think about whether you want to eat it or not?
It's actually really hard because it doesn't need to be labelled. And if we're in Europe, if something came from a GM corn, that would have to be labelled as genetically modified. So if it was genetically modified corn oil, that would need labelling. In Australia, it doesn't because they say it's refined and so it doesn't need labelling. So what you have to do is know what the crops are, know what they're made into, and if you want to be really quick about this, don't buy processed foods or only buy processed foods that you know, that you trust, that you've rung them up and you've had a really good chat about with them. On the GM Free Australia Alliance site, we've got collected a list of the companies that say GM free on their packets. You can buy organic, but cook fresh, buy fresh. And to be honest, that's the way that nutritionists are telling us to eat.
And I think one of your biggest campaign has been the GM food labelling for a while, and you know, I was interested to read that the Food Standards Code outlines that food produced using gene technology must be labelled unless, and this is the one that it's accidentally there at a very low concentration.
Yeah, I know.
And then you look at Steve Marsh's situation, you know, man trying to do the right thing by growing his crops without pesticides and,
yeah,
you know.
There are two things there. First of all, if you do go to the Versants website and it says it must be labelled, it's mandatory to be labelled, you think, OK, it has to have a label. But what they don't say is if it's been highly refined, it doesn't need a label, and all those crops, things like soy, you don't go and chew a bit of raw soy. You know, it's been processed, so it makes you feel reassured it's labelled, but it's not. And you're right about the contamination. And Steve Marsh was this organic farmer, and his neighbour grew GM canola and harvested it in such a way, so they harvested it, so they cut it, and it was laid flat in the field, and then, which is what they do sometimes, and then a storm came along and blew it across 70% of his farm, so he lost certification. And the only recourse he has was to sue his neighbour, and they'd grown up together, and he lost.
Yep.
And what they were trying to say is that, well, it's all Steve Marsh's fault because he wanted his organic product to have no GM in it whatsoever, which is the organic standard. And he lost, and he's taken to appeal and has lost again. So it's been
a very, very trying long time for Steve, I think, as well, to just try and get to where he's at.
I think Steve is such a hero, and so is his wife, Sue. I mean, they have stood up to all of this. They have stood up to a court case. They have stood up to knowing that the people, you know, it's just completely unjust. And the farmer, Steve Baxter, it turned out, has been supported by Monsanto, which is the big chemical company that owns it. So it really is a farmer supported by people's donations versus
the big
court systems and the big multinationals.
I guess these eternal questions then are, you know, are GM foods safe? And what are the possible risks of GM foods that you guys have found?
Well, what you get is the way GM foods are approved is the companies give studies to our food standards regulator, Versants, who's passed everyone. They don't do any independent studies. They don't actually ask for any animal testing whatsoever. I was looking through the animal studies yesterday. You have some independent studies, so problems with the gut, the kidneys, the liver, the pituitary gland, the testes, the uterus. I mean, it just goes on and on. I'm just thinking, these are studies showing harm, and yet they're dismissed. Mm. And these industry studies, sometimes which are 1 week, having fed the animal one dose, that's okay. So I think we need to realise when it says it's tested, well, who's done the tests and how good are they?
Fran, does that mean that Australia is well behind the European standard, and we need to sort of catch up in that way?
Yeah, I think we're well behind it in labelling, because I think that Europe has a very strong local food culture, and I think they are passionately connected to their produce in a direct way that Australia loves food, but it's not that real thousands of years of producing it.
Mm-hmm.
And their labelling laws are much better. You know, that if it comes from a GM crop, it has to be labelled.
Fran, we could talk about this all day. Now, just give us one final piece of advice on really how to avoid GM food, and then just, you know, if people would like to follow Madge and read some of your, you know, information, where can they go?
Well, the first bit is our site is madge.org.au. We've got loads of information on there, including a how to shop GM free page, which has got lots of information. And I think the thing is to not be depressed and feel dismal about this, but understand this is an invitation for us to reconnect with our food, because we don't want this food from nowhere that's it's not labelled. We don't know who's grown it, how's it been grown. We need to reconnect with who's growing our food, and it might be us. It might encourage us to grow our food. And then we need to re-engage with how's it cooked, how's it been prepared, has it been picked fairly. And so it encourages us to really engage with the food system in a fair way and get a hell of a lot more out of it and become far more reconnected. So I think rather than thinking, oh, it's another thing to worry about, turn it around and think, this is a real encouragement to get really connected with my food community.
And I think that's what I've loved about the Sustainable Breakfast series, especially the Thursday edition, which is on food. It's been interesting to hear all these different organisations, and it all comes back to the individual taking, taking charge. And, you know, it's not that hard to grow zucchini. I've done it, and I'm the worst gardener on the planet. But you start somewhere, and then obviously, you know, you can then incorporate that into your daily life. But we really appreciate you joining us on 3CR Thursday Breakfast, Fran.
Thanks very much.
3CR Breakfast would like to say thank you to program sponsor, the New International Bookshop, for the financial support of this program. You can find the New International Bookshop in the basement of Trades Hall at 54 Victoria Street, Carlton.
We are Sustainable Breakfast on Thursday. We want to go out by thanking our guests. We started off with Lorna Pettifer from Ceres Environment Park, and also we had Cassie Duncan from Sustainable Table.
And we had Trish Pringle talking to us about Richmond Community Garden, and we just had Fran Morrell joining us again from MAJG. You can find all of their links and website details on 3cr.org.au. But thank you again, John, for joining me on Thursday Breakfast.
No problem, Dean. Let's do it again.
And thank you to Friends of the Earth. Now it's time to introduce some live music. So we're introducing Genevieve Fry from Cold Hands Warm Heart, who is about to join us live.
Hi, I am Genevieve Fry, and I'm part of Cold Hands Warm Heart. Just like to say thank you to 3CR for coming to Friends of the Earth and broadcasting. It's such a fantastic series. Come on down. We do have breakfast this morning until 8:30, and we've got tomorrow 7 till 8:30. So it's free organic vegan breakfast, and there's tea and coffee, and you get to listen to some fantastic speakers on some fantastic issues. But right now, you get to listen to me, and I'm going to play solo. I've shrunk my band down into my laptop, so we're going to give that a whirl. And fingers crossed it all goes well. Thank you. Like a radiant prism.
sky is so blue, two shadows so Transform.
and I must the tears of all things wrong and
You're currently listening to 3CR's Sustainable Breakfast Series in its third year, broadcasting live from Friends of the Earth. You can join us each morning from Tuesday the 15th to Friday the 18th of March at the Friends of the Earth Food Co-op for 4 days of live broadcasts, free breakfasts and live music. Hear 3CR's breakfast presenters with campaigners, commentators and innovators talking about the most important challenge of our time, how to achieve environmental sustainability with social justice. Each morning this week, Tuesday the 15th to Friday the 18th of March, 7am to 8:30am, 3CR is broadcasting live at Friends of the Earth's Food Co-op and Organic Cafe. Find us at 312 Smith Street in Collingwood. Tune in to 3CR, 8:55am, 3CR Digital or stream us via 3cr.org.au. 3CR Sustainable Breakfast Week, supported by the City of Yarra and Friends of the Earth.
Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia, on the Kulin Nation. For more information and to find out how you can support 3CR, go to www.3cr.org.au.